This is the UVic oral history program interview with Sheila Payne, being interviewed by Declan Hughes on April the 20th, 2011. Sheila Payne, do I have permission to record this interview?
You do.
All right. So, we'll start out with how you grew up in Shrewsbury in England.
Mm-hmm. I did. That's right. A privileged childhood, I think, really, with a nanny and maids and a cook by the name of Patty, who occasionally got at the port and used to charge round the kitchen shouting, Henry VIII, I am, I am. Anyway, that's what I first remember. And I remember when the war was declared and we were up at my grandmother's house because we'd gone to live with her, because the pay corps had already commandeered our house in the town.
And that was the pay corps?
The pay corps was part of the army. And we went up to my grandmother's, and I remember her coming into, we were all in the garden, I think, the children. That was my sister and I and my younger brother. And I remember Gran coming into the garden with a very long face and saying, we're at war again. And this was the first idea we had, of course, that we were at war. And then the next thing I remember is my father saying that the Fräulein who taught German had to go back to Germany. And he always described her as pretty as paint. I think she was very nice looking. And next thing I remember is we shared our school with a similar school from Birkenhead. And we had lessons in the morning, and I think they had lessons in the afternoon. That's how it worked. But they didn't spend too long with us. I think most of them went back to Birkenhead. Perhaps that wasn't being bombed. I think Liverpool was the chief target. And what else do I remember?
So they moved over to your school because they were being bombed?
They were afraid of bombing.
They were afraid of it?
I think they were afraid that they'd be bombed. I don't think they actually were bombed, because I think the bombers went for Liverpool. Birkenhead was not exactly a suburb of Liverpool, but very close to it, on the coast.
You didn't really think, did you think much of that? This new school?
No, we just accepted it, you know, like we accepted everything. It was just, that was it, you know, wartime. Perhaps they were in danger. We shared our school. That was all there was to it. And the girls were probably billeted on families. We didn't have any, because our house was full anyway. But I think a lot of them took billets. A lot of Shrewsbury people took them as billets. And what can I remember? Oh, then some people went to America. That was another thing. Some English children left for America. And a girl I knew quite well, called Janet, was one of the ones who went to America. And the younger son of friends of ours, friends of my parents, also went. Bertram, he went to America too. But my mother decided not to send us because one of the ships was torpedoed on the way to the States. And a lot of children, I think, were probably lost. So we stayed put. And especially as Shrewsbury was a relatively safe area. There was nothing really to bomb there except the station. And the Germans did once go for the station. I don't think they did much damage. because the station didn't seem to be out of commission for very long. So that was that. I remember Jewish refugees being there. I remember the Sobenheims. Judge Sobenheim. He was a judge in Germany, obviously, and had to leave. And he came with his two children, Eva, and I can't remember what the younger one was called. Elizabeth, I think. I think we called her Elizabeth. I don't know what she was in German. But that was another thing. And then I remember the German planes going over. You always knew that they were German by the sound of their engines. They had a very distinctive sort of drone that English aircraft didn't have. So you always knew that they were German. And they were presumably going over to bomb Liverpool, which I think was heavily bombed. I saw Hull much later, in 1947, when I went to Finland. I think we left from the port of Hull, from what I remember, and that was very badly bombed. I never went near London. We kept away from London. That was obviously badly bombed too. But my mother was in the St. John, and when there was a raid, she had to go. And I remember sitting on the cellar steps with my grandmother and my younger brother, and I think a rather nice woman called Phyllis Morris, who stayed with us. She'd been our nanny, and she stayed with us afterwards. And I think she was with us too, from what I remember. But that's about all. We had a lot of trouble with rationing. My mother used to go down practically every day to get supplies on a bicycle. She used to go on a bicycle. And Pauline, she fell once and broke her nose, which was too bad.
So everything was rationed?
Everything was rationed except coffee. And there was a horrible loaf called a national loaf, which used to go mouldy in no time. If you, you know, you had to eat it very fast. It was pretty disgusting. We had some very nice things from the United States, very nice powdered milk, I remember. And what else did they send? I think they were powdered eggs, but they were both delicious. And then they disappeared, and a British equivalent appeared in the shops, which was really quite disgusting, you know, not nearly as good as the American stuff. I do remember that.
Do you remember being hungry during the war because of rations?
Well, I don't remember being hungry, but the school alerted my mother that I had grown so many inches and lost so many pounds in weight. And she was told, I know, that she'd have to feed me more, that somehow she'd have to find food. We used to get very good things called Cornish pasties from a shop in Shrewsbury. And I suppose they were really all vegetable inside, but they were very, very good. I don't think there was much meat. We insisted on boiling fowl and black market eggs.
Black market eggs?
Mm.
Because they were in such high demand?
Well, you got one egg a week, and half the time it was bad. I think they kept them too long or something. I don't know what it was, but they were pretty disgusting, from what I remember. And in order to give us something to eat, my mother used to get black market eggs. which was fine because my father, who'd been a general practitioner, had a lot of country patients. And one of them, I think her name was Mrs. Pinscher, she obviously had an egg farm. Well, most of her eggs was turned over to the government, but she kept a certain amount back, probably to feed her own family, and she let us have some eggs, but it was on the black market, definitely. That's about all. Cheese was rationed, you got a funny little piece, which now one would eat in one sitting, you know, and that had to last a week. And I remember my mother made a cake, delicious it was too, with bird's custard, because in those days bird's custard had real eggs in it. Doesn't anymore, but in those days it did. And I remember she made this delicious sandwich cake. What else do I remember?
So when when German planes would go overhead, and what would be your reaction, and what would happen typically?
Well, we always knew it was due for, Liverpool was in for it. Mm-hmm. You know, they were on the way to Liverpool. And so we sort of, after a while, I don't even know the siren went. I don't think it did. It went when, well, it must have gone, the sirens must have gone occasionally, because otherwise we wouldn't have been on the cellar steps. So I think we took notice of the sirens. We had an Anderson shelter in the garden, and it became waterlogged very fast, and it was just a nice place for frogs, really. It was full of frogs. And I think this was because the soil was clay, and obviously it was not suitable for a shelter. But anyway, we had this shelter, and it had I think it was called an Anderson shelter. And there were duck boards in there, and bunks and so on. But we never used it. The simple reason is it was waterlogged. It was completely useless. So if we had to take cover, we sat on the steps of the cellar. But I can't remember taking cover more than perhaps twice, that's all.
Were you afraid any of those times?
No, because we knew that these German bombers were on their way to Liverpool, but they weren't interested in Shrewsbury. Otherwise, I mean, why would we be full of refugees? Hmm. You know, it was obviously supposed to be a safe place.
But there were a few times where German planes, pilots
well,
would...
Well, once they dropped, they went for the station once, and I don't think they were very successful in bombing it because, as I say, it wasn't out of commission for long, I can't remember really. But certainly I don't think they did much damage. The usual thing about Germans landing dressed as nuns was talked about sometimes, but I think we all knew it was a lot of nonsense.
So the idea was, you were told that German paratroopers would drop dressed as nuns.
Yeah, well, yes, this was what was a sort of rumor that went about, you know. But
so were you told to look out?
Everybody knew it was a lot of nonsense.
Yeah.
But and then there were soldiers on the bridges. There were two bridges into Shrewsbury. One was the English bridge, and the other was the Welsh bridge. The Welsh bridge led the main road to Wales, was that through there. And then the English bridge, that would be the road led eventually, presumably, to London, if you kept on long enough. And I remember soldiers on the bridges. And that's when Dr. McCorkle got picked up. Dr. McCorkle was an Irish GP. And his son was a great friend of my brother's. And anyway, poor Dr. McCorkle was picked up. I suppose his accent was so thick that the soldiers on the bridge must have thought he was a German. And he had to go to the police station. He was not pleased, I can tell you. So we had that incident.
And there's your uncle?
And then my uncle, who was a farmer, was in his field, just viewing his crops, I think. And a German, Messerschmitt 109, came down and tried to use him as target practice. So he lay down. I don't know if he got to a ditch. I have a feeling he did. He must have run, I suppose. And while the German was, you know, up at the end of his thing and going to come back, he didn't get him anyway, he got away. But I think he made for the edge of the field, probably, and lay down in a ditch there.
And it was just one plane?
One plane, yeah, just a sole plane, a Messerschmitt 109. Because my brother was very interested in planes, and we used to spend our time looking at these silhouettes of planes, you know, and so we could recognize a Fokker Wolf, something or other, and a Messerschmitt 109. And of course, the interesting thing was when I got to Finland and I said how good the Spitfire was, the Finns replied, "Oh, yes, but it was nothing on the Messerschmitt 109. So that was interesting.
And didn't you say there was one day one plane was circling above the school?
Yes, that was very interesting. Shrewsbury School, which was a boys' school, there was a day boys' house and then the rest were boarders. And one day, evidently, this plane was circling around. I think it was at the time of recess. And they thought that it must have been a former student, probably a German, because they had some German students before the war. And they thought that it must have been a student who'd come back and was having a look around. He didn't do any harm, he just flew over and flew away. So I don't know how he managed that.
And another time a plane dropped a mine in the middle of a field?
Yes, in the middle of a field. I think they didn't want to take landmines home. They were probably a nuisance. And so they would drop them, and this one dropped in the middle of a field, just miles from anywhere. I don't think it did any harm. I don't think it even killed a cow. But it was there, this huge, huge pit, and we all went to look at it. That's about all I remember, I think. I do remember the rationing. That was grim.
And also the adults talking about the war.
Yes, and that became boring because when there were no victories, the BBC would dish up old news, and so you'd get the same thing over and over again. It became extremely boring anyway to children, and we just didn't bother to listen anymore. I never listened to the news until I remember Pearl Harbor, I remember hearing about that, and of course that brought the Americans in. And all these Yanks were in England ready for D-Day. I remember the day when the British forces were taken off the beaches at Dunkirk. I remember that, and lots of small boats went out. And luckily, it was a nice day. I think it was in June, as far as I remember, I can't quite remember. And all these small boats went out and collected the British forces off the beaches. And I do remember hearing about that. And I do remember the Home Guard. And the Home Guard, I mean, it was a farce. They were all old chaps. And they didn't have rifles. Some of them only had broomsticks. You know, I mean, if the Germans had decided to invade then, it would have been very bad indeed. This was before the Americans arrived, of course. And there were just the remains of the army, which had been taken off at Dunkirk. And these poor old chaps, you know, who were, as I say, they weren't even armed. Some of them only had broomsticks. I remember that quite well.
Now, you said you were glad that you knew a bit of German.
I was, yes. I thought if they come, at least I can say something.
Did you think that was a real possibility? That?
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. We all thought that we'd be invaded. My mother had a revolver. Awful old thing. And it had a hidden chamber. It was very dangerous. I think it was as dangerous to the person who was trying to shoot it as it would have been to the victim. And she turned it in after the war, I remember.
Can you remember anything else about when the Americans were in England, just before D-Day? Do you remember seeing any Americans?
I can remember that they had a bad name. And you were supposed to avoid them. You weren't supposed to have anything to do with them. I worked for the American Red Cross Club for a short time in the canteen. And they were very nice young. They were nice young men, I must say, very polite, very nice. But I did notice that when some blacks came in, black Americans, they treated them, what can I say, they were standoffish, no doubt about it. They didn't like them, and they didn't like them coming into their canteen. It was quite obvious. Of course, we treated them just like we'd treated anybody else. Served them up. I used to get fed up with being asked if I was standing on a box.
Because you're so tall.
Being so tall, I think, yes. But, yeah, they were nice. They were nice chaps, most of them.
And you went on, you were on recess with your class, and there were a bunch of Americans.
Oh, the ones that chiatus, yes, we were doing gymnastics on one of the tennis courts, on the hard tennis courts. And evidently these Americans had all lined up on the above, you know, on the road, and they started hooting and whooping and so on. And I remember the gym teacher saying, "Don't look at them, girls, take no notice," you know, which was very funny. But anyway, that was the last gym class we had outside, I think. After that, we stayed inside. But yeah, that was funny too. And I told you I found this Nazi book that had been left behind. And I don't think anybody knew it was there, but it was the most ghastly propaganda. Even in those days, I realized that it was propaganda. I don't know. I imagine the German teacher must have left it behind. I don't think anybody knew it was there, and I didn't tell anybody it was there. But I did read it. And I remember it was in German print, which in those days I could read. I suppose I could still if I wanted to. But anyway, yeah.
So then, the end of the war creeped up, and do you remember anything about that?
Well, yeah. I remember the Americans coming in after Pearl Harbor, And then that's when the Americans arrived in Britain, obviously preparing for D-Day. There were a lot of them. And there seemed to be a lot of them around Shrewsbury. Again, I suppose, because it was a relatively safe area. I don't think there was anything else. I used to go dance to a dancing class, and the Americans used to come there, some of them.
Do you remember VE Day?
I do. Yes, I do remember that. My mother took a photograph of us, I remember, on VE Day. I can't remember if my sister was there or not. She was a VAD and she worked for St Dunstan's, dealing with the blind people. There were quite a lot of blind servicemen. It was very sad. But that's right. I remember some of them used to come and have meals with us. And I remember Danny Pretorius, who was South African. And he was blind. He was one of the men who was blinded.
You probably already knew that the war was coming to a close anyway, so...
Yes. So by then we realized that, the Germans had it. I remember hearing about the Battle of the Bulge, where they'd tried to make a counterattack. As I say, we weren't really interested in news. We were only interested in what was going on with us, with school and so on. Mm-hmm. And I do remember that we were told that in case of a raid, we all had to go down to the locker room. And we were told to take a heavy book with us, which you were to put over the back of your head and your neck. I think we had one or two, but they were probably just practices. Because I can't remember the siren going in daytime. Don't think it ever went in daytime. Difficult to remember now. I think it was nearly always, if it went, it was in the evening. And that, of course, is when the German planes came over. And we had girls from London too, schools near London. I went to what was called the Girls Public Day School Trust, which was fee-paying, but the fees were very low, because my mother was a widow and she couldn't possibly have afforded to send us to posh schools anyway. But I remember there were two girls from the Channel Islands who arrived, and there were some girls from schools near London. I can't tell you which ones they were, but there would be schools on the periphery of London, the suburbs of London. They just came and joined us and were in our class. I don't know who they lived with. They must have been billeted on somebody. And I remember there were two French girls, Maud Séjard and Denise Robinson. Now, Denise Robinson's father must have been English and her mother French. And Maud Séjard, I think, was Egyptian, as far as I know. She certainly looked like a Middle Eastern. I think she was Egyptian. So presumably her father was French and her mother probably Egyptian. And they arrived fairly early on in the war, from what I remember. And our Mademoiselle Laguier, who was from Brittany, and obviously couldn't go back. She must have stayed in England the whole time. She used to come in and chat to them. And I think it was really for our benefit, so that we could hear French spoken as it should be spoken, which was very interesting for me, because I was always interested in languages anyway. But that's about it, I think. That's about all I can remember.
And do you remember anything that David said? Because he was in...
Well, he was a medical student through the war, and he lodged with his great aunt, Aunt B, in Hammersmith. So I don't know that he never spoke of being bombed. He was at the Middlesex Hospital. It might have been after the war. He qualified very young, he was only 22 when he qualified. And then he went out to Iraq with the RAF. And he was with the Levies, who were Christians. I think they were Assyrians. And they were Christians. And in the summer, he went to a camp, which must have been up in the mountains somewhere near, must have been in northern Iraq, because they said, don't fire, the doctor's coming on a donkey, don't fire at him. And so he was going to see Kurds, I think, who must have been in northern Iraq, near the Turkish border, the border with Turkey, I guess. And that's what he must have been. I don't think he was in London during the Blitz. He must have started his medical training after the war, because he did first MB at Shrewsbury. No, at Epsom College. He was at Epsom College, and he did first MB there, and so he went straight into second MB at the Middlesex, when he went to the Middlesex Medical School.
Well, if that's all you'd like to, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. The only next thing, which was unusual, was, as I say, when I went to Finland. But that was in 1947. That was after the war. And it was very difficult, because you never knew who was a communist. Rumour had it that the woman who did the big wash, you know, they had this sort of German idea of saving everything up, and then it was all washed together in the laundry. At Sunila, this was a sulphide factory, and it was a whole complex. It had been designed by Aino Altonen, I think his name was, a Finn, and he designed the whole thing, the factory and the houses for the engineers, and then there was the houses for the workers in the factory, and so on. So it was a whole complex, and as I say, you never knew who was a communist and who wasn't. But I was told to be very careful what I said. So there was that, and then the other thing was, of course, that a lot of the Finns had been in Finnish German regiments. And when I moved from the Finnish factory, family that I was with, I moved into a Swedish household. And the eldest son, Gustav Anrud, he had been in a joint German-Finnish regiment. So again, one had to guard one's tongue all the time. You know, it was a very difficult situation in a way. And it ended up with the secret police taking my passport. So my mother had a fit, of course, when I wrote her and told her that I hadn't got a passport. She said, what are you going to do if the Russians walk in? You've nothing to prove, you're British. Anyway, so, but that was because we missed the boat. We were in Stockholm, another English girl and I, we'd gone to Stockholm for a week. And I was asked to bring all sorts of things back. I had all sorts of things in my luggage. Ski boots for the one little boy and, you know, this and that, and a dress for the little girl and the family, and these were for the Finns. And I think they'd paid me. I can't remember how they paid me for this stuff. Must have been in Finnish money, I guess, which I probably changed for Swedish money or something. I don't know how I managed anyway. Can't remember. And I do remember that I'd got material pinned inside my coat. Yards of it that I'd bought, you know, to make a dress. And I was terrified that I'd be searched. They were searching every sixth person. And I happened to be the fifth, thank goodness. So I got through with all this stuff for the Finns and this material which was in my coat. But unfortunately, we'd mistaken the hour. The boat went at 17 hours. And we thought, I know, we both thought that was 7 o'clock. You know, we weren't used to that 24-hour clock. And so we arrived 2 hours late for the boat. So we put up with the pastor and his wife from the British Church in Stockholm, who were kind enough, they'd come with us to the boat. And so they very kindly let us stay in their place. And we went next morning with the boat, I remember. And when I got to the other side, for some reason, the port authorities took my passport. I think we arrived at Turku. Anyway, we didn't go into Helsinki. We went into a port on the west coast of Finland, which I think in Finnish was called Turku. What was it called? Was it Turku? I can't remember. It had a Swedish name too. And we put in there, and the Russians were very funny about the trains going from Helsinki to this western port. You had to go through a zone which obviously the Russians didn't want us to see what was there, because all the windows were blacked out. The blinds were pulled down for that part, going through this Russian zone. So, yeah, it was interesting. It was very interesting. Almost more interesting than the war. The war was not of interest to the children, I can tell you. Mm-hmm. Not in the least. We weren't interested in the least in the war. I think, yes, we were interested in the Home Guard and the fact that they weren't armed, of course, you know, things like that. But not otherwise. And the news, as I say, was simply dreadful because it was rehash. I think if the British hadn't got any victories, they rehashed something. So it was deadly boring. Deadly boring.
Right, well, if that's everything, then...
I think so.
Thanks for...
Everything I can remember.
...participating in the interview.
Not at all.
Here's the release form that I'll just get you to sign there.
Where do you want me to sign? That was conducted by...
Right. Just right there.
Sheila C. Payne.
Right. So, thank you.